Alrighty. Time for Truth About Markets, New Zealand. On RDU, Christchurch, with Max and Stacy, bringing to you all the markets and finance and scandals. Last week, we got the new Lehman Brothers scandal. When you thought there wouldn't be any more Lehman Brothers scandal, there's another Lehman Brothers scandal. Apparently, Dick Fuld, the former CEO, was complicit in hiding up to $50 billion worth of debt off the balance sheet using what's called a Repo 105. Repo 108. This would be a good name for a band down there in New Zealand. Repo 105, 108. I can just imagine it. I think I'll start the band. Repo 105. We're going to be doing cover tunes from the
Price
Carpenters.
Church.
From the Carpenters CDs back. You remember them?
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, so Lehman Brothers and Dick Fuld, they're back in the news. The scandals that have shocked and rocked the global finance system are still very much in play, the aftershocks and the new shocks. Stacy, the thing about it is that 2 years ago on the Huffington Post, I wrote a blog called Peekaboo Accounting, and I said Lehman Brothers is probably engaging in end-of-the-quarter balance sheet obfuscation by parking debt on off-balance sheet accounts just to make it look like they are less indebted than they really are. And that's exactly what now, 2 years later, we find out.
Almost verbatim, the report by Anton Valuska, Vasuka, whatever his name is, he found that, in fact, he seemed to have read your article, read your blog, and posted that as his report.
Right. Well, you know, the whole repo market and the whole way that debt is accounted for by these accounting firms. And by the way, the accounting firms have once again been called into question here, Stacy. In this case, it's Ernst & Young. Remember back during the Enron days, it was a company called Anderson that was cooking the books for Enron. Now it appears as though Ernst & Young gave their blessing to some transactions as well as some lawyers in the U.K., to this Repo 105 transaction, which everybody is saying, you know, this is the thing. Everybody says, well, technically it's legal. And the thing is that when you are part of a rigged market system, rigged market capitalism, the people doing the market rigging use the profits they make rigging markets to change the laws. I mean, the reason these things are legal is because the laws have been changed over the past 10, 15 years since the beginning of neoliberalization and Reagan and Thatcherism, so that what used to be illegal is now legal. So to say it's legal, well, yeah, it's legal this week because they changed the law to make crime legal. So, I mean, if you want John Gotti or you want Al Capone to write your laws for you and say, well, robbing banks is legal according to our governor Al Capone, according to our Chief Justice Al Capone, then yeah, it's legal. But unfortunately, repercussions in the society are quite devastating. Devastation!
Yeah, but there's also been a trend in the last 30 years or so, which is the complete opposite for the previous 200,000 years of human history.
Whoa.
And that is that humans used to be free to travel and move wherever they wanted across borders.
Mm-hmm.
And capital was often restricted.
That's
and
true.
Now it's the exact opposite, that humans are more and more, every single week there's a new restriction on human traveling. And now even to travel across a border, you've got to get naked and show all your bodily private parts.
That's right.
But these guys don't have to show any of that. Capital doesn't have to show their private parts, as we've seen here. They hide all their private parts wherever they feel like it.
Yeah, well, there's that shadow banking system. There's all the fraud being committed by the big accounting firms. There's the fraud committed by the rating agencies. There's the fraud committed by the investment banks, the fund managers, and the media. You know, outlets like CNBC report on the fraud as if it's something to get all excited about and to cheerlead. So when you put it all together, you have rackets, racketeering. And the wealth and income gap is exploding. I mean, if all this racketeering led to some kind of distribution of wealth and people's, the wealth and income gap wasn't becoming more severe, then maybe you could say, well, yeah, you know, then you could say that, you know, these animals are defecating on the field, but, you know, all the manure is helping us grow our crops. You see, that would be an argument that to justify defecation in your backyard. You could say, well, it's manure. Manure is rich in nutrients, and we're growing our crops based on all of that animal poo. But here you have bankers pooing on your front lawn and your backyard, and it's just causing you to go bankrupt. And they're saying, no, no, it's not poop. It's fertilizer, and you should love it. Well, unfortunately, the numbers don't suggest that this is accurate. It's not causing growth. It's not causing crops to grow. It's causing people to die face first in the mud. They're dropping like flies from poverty and all kinds of ills and things because these guys are calling poop cash. You know, I've said it before, and I'll say it again, Stacey. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. It's my new band, Repo 105. Hey, Lloyd Blank Fine, here's some dog poop. Can you turn it into gold? If you can, you're a witch. You deserve to go down to the bottom of the ditch, Lloyd Blank Fine. Hey, Lloyd Blank Fine.
You're going a bit Native American Indian there.
Here's some dog poo. If you can't turn it into gold, then you've been lying. Therefore, you got to go back to your crying. Cause we're gonna take you down to the central square. And we're gonna rip out all your hair while we chop, 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 chop. That's the guillotine, Lloyd Blank Fiend. Chop, chop, chop. That's my chop, chop song.
You know, Mike from Liverpool has just gone totally crazy.
Oh, yeah, I'm gonna sing that song about little Timmy from Liverpool. What's that song go? I'm a little dilly from Liverpool.
Jimmy Osmond.
Jimmy Osmond. He's my inspiration for all my musical endeavors. I'm a little lost lover boy from Liverpool or something like that.
Oh, okay. Whatever. So but actually explain what a repo is. So you're talking about Repo 105. What's a repo?
If you've seen that famous film, Repo 105, man, with Harry Dean Stanton.
No, we know that's a repossess the car. Is repo in this case, is it short for repossession?
Repurchase.
Repurchase.
It's a repurchase agreement.
Where's the O come from?
Just shorthand used by banking jihadis.
It should be repo.
In between.
It should be repo.
Repo.
It's repo. Not repo.
No, repo.
Repo.
Repo, repo.
Stop speaking monkey.
That's the cry they use in the Wall Street jungle. Repo, repo. It's a repurchase agreement. And basically, it's used to smooth out various accounting situations you need to smooth out.
So basically you take a pile of debt.
Yeah.
And which is marked as an asset on your balance sheet.
Yeah. Well, they have a little explanation for a repo.
Repo. Remember,
give you the exact,
we no longer refer to it as free market capitalism. It's rigged market capitalism, and we no longer refer to it as repo. We refer to it as repo.
The repo agreement. Okay, it's in the Financial Times here.
Here's how the Financial Times explains a repo.
Okay, so according to the Financial Times, a repo, a bank transfers assets to a counterparty as collateral in exchange for cash. At the same time, the bank agrees to repay the cash plus interest and take the collateral back after a specified period. Now, in other words, it's a repurchase agreement. So you're entering into a contract that says you're going to buy these assets back. You're selling them and you're going to buy them back at a specified price with an interest attached. The assets which have been transferred as collateral remain in the bank's balance sheet, and it occurs a liability for the cash it has agreed to pay back. How a Repo 105 can be used to reduce leverage.
So we're going to talk about that. That's the second half of this repo thing.
All right.
We're going to talk about that just after we get back from this musical break.
All right, we're back talking about repos. So, okay, how is a Repo 105 can be used to reduce leverage? A Repo 105 occurs in much the same way as a normal repo, but instead, the bank pledges assets worth 105% of the cash received from the counterparty. The transaction is then described as a sale rather than a financing agreement. As such, the assets can then be removed from the balance sheet, while the cash received is used to pay off the liabilities, reducing apparent leverage at critical moments.
Mm-hmm. So they're saying that that these were not illegal.
Well, see, normally in a repo agreement, you're basically, it's a loan, but you would still count it as a loan on your balance sheet, and therefore you would be having a loan on your balance sheet. If it's a repo 105, as it's described here, you are agreeing to sell it and then repurchase it, and therefore for those 2 or 3 days, you can say, oh, I got no stinking debt. I got no debt. You see no debt on my balance sheet? I got no debt, motherfucker. I got no debt. I'm clean. It's all cash, bro. It's all cash. Who you call indebted? Who you call this stinking debt? Yeah. You see, that's the repo, because you can just say, you know, you're clean as a whistle. I got no debt, man. So this is accounting fraud. And is there any genuine need for repurchase? Now, the thing about it is that if you look at the yield curve from overnight repo agreement all the way out to a 30-year treasury bond, you see interest rates will fluctuate according to what the underlying economic situation may or may not be, depending on who's counting what. But you see, it's short-term money, basically, short-term loans. And during the financial collapse of 2008, you often hear that the repo market has dried up. The repo market is considered to be the most liquid market, and it's just banks basically loaning each other money overnight in this huge multi-trillion-dollar repo market. It's just, you know, extraordinarily short-term financing that is used because it's cheap. It's the cheapest form of financing. So you don't want to use a financing at a 5, 10, 15, 20, 30-year bond because interest rates typically on the yield curve are higher in a normal yield curve, not an inverted yield curve, but a normal yield curve. And, you know, so you want to go short end, short, short, short. So repo is a short, short, short.
So what do you do in 24 hours with one of these overnight repos?
It just goes back to where it was in 24 hours ago.
But why do you need to borrow money for 24 hours? Is it just to make...
Because let's say you've got some money rolling over. You've got some debt rolling over. And you need money to pay off. You roll your debt over. You're constantly rolling over debt using short-term money. So you'll say... It's just a way to avoid paying interest on the money you're borrowing. But eventually, if you keep borrowing short and lending long, as many economists will tell you, eventually you go bankrupt.
This was the big problem with the global financial collapse, because all the banks were lending long, i.e. they were making loans to consumers for 5 to 30 years for their mortgage.
Yeah.
But they themselves were financing that loan in the overnight market or the short-term market.
That's right. So it works until the short-term rates go up. Or there's a credit collapse or a credit freeze.
So they can't roll over that debt.
That's right. Nothing can roll. Yeah. It's a credit collapse, credit freeze. And then you get Hank Paulson will go down to the Congress and say, "Give us $700 billion or we're going to kill your stinking economy." Mm-hmm. You can give us your money. Give us your money, punk. Hank Paulson. And basically that's what he did. And he justifies it as saying that had we not stolen that money at that time, you know, this credit freeze would have continued. Now, the fact of the matter is that we know that the solution on offer from Paulson and those guys was the worst possible solution. Clearly, the Sweden version of 1993 of simply nationalizing all the banks for a couple of years, firing all of the intransigent, is that the right word? No.
Firing
all the banking, bad guys, and putting all and ring fencing all the debt, and working it off over 10 or 15 years like they did with the Resolution Trust Corporation after the savings and loan crisis, and then opening up 10 or 15 new banks and getting the credit spigots open again to service the needs of small businesses who then could hire people. I mean, that's what Obama should have done. That was the prescription that would have taken care of this problem and would have put the bad guys in jail. And the economy would be well on its way to growing in a new spurt. But instead, they bailed out the creditors, the people who made the bad loans to begin with, who are responsible for their banking suicide missions. So they did the exact worst possible thing they could possibly do. And the result is now 2 years, 3 years later, the situation has not even begun to bottom out yet. Because there's still hundreds of trillions more bad debt left in the system.
It hasn't bottomed out for the peasant class yet, for the bottom 99.9%. It clearly has bottomed out for the billionaire class, because we saw the number of billionaires in the world increased by something like 40% last year.
That's right.
So, you know, they're soaring back in wealth. But for the rest of us.
That's right. And it was a stick up, right?
If you're not a billionaire, by the way, you're a peasant, okay?
Pretty much. I mean, you will soon be a peasant. So, I mean, so now you've got another huge wave down in the real estate market coming. You've got another huge wave in deflation coming. You've got another huge multi-hundred trillion dollar bailout coming, or let's call it another $15 trillion bailout from the U.S. coming, which will gap the income and wealth gap again by some astronomical figure. The amount of concentration of wealth in the billionaire class and multi-billionaire class will once again rocket upward, and the peasant class will expand. And all of the instruments of oppression and surveillance will also expand. And you end up with the casino gulag, as I've been talking about for a number of years now, where people are just twittering themselves to death, you know, gambling a lotto, online lotto, and watching erotica because they can't afford good porn until they drive themselves insane, and then they throw themselves off a cliff. And that's pretty much the economy that we have to face. So the thing is, you got to get a hot dog stand next to the edge of the cliff so you can service these suicide depressed people with their last meal. And that's the way I plan to make money in this new environment. It's called the suicide hot dog stand.
Well, you know,
about the suicide hotline. I'm talking about suicide hot dogs. Suicide hot dogs. It's your last meal, buddy. Make it a good one.
And you believe that hot dogs are a good one?
Well, it's cheap. It's meat, kind of.
What do you really care about how cheap it is when you're about to throw yourself off a cliff?
Well, if you only got a quarter in your pocket, you know, I could just throw myself off this cliff with an empty stomach, or I could have one of these delicious suicide hot dogs from Max Kaiser and have a wonderful weenie before I go flying off into the abyss.
Obviously, we're not going to take credit cards. Presumably. Presumably, they're throwing no credit.
maybe if they were a collector's item, like I saw that the credit card, the American Express card of Elvis Presley was sold a few years ago for $12,000. I mean, if you want to give me a collectible item like this, fine. You know, so give me something of value.
I saw Elvis Presley was in the news. Speaking of, I was just talking about how difficult it is for individuals to cross borders.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, capital can go anywhere and commit all sorts of crimes and pick and choose what tax laws they like, which criminal laws they like.
Pick and shovel.
Well, but there was Elvis Presley apparently was somebody traveled around the world on Elvis Presley's passport. They created a fake passport and these so-called, unbreakable biometric passports.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that all the instruments of oppression and surveillance they've got a lot of bugs in them.
Unless it could be the real Elvis Presley. This could be proof that he is.
I saw him at my suicide hot dog stand. He was about to head into the bathroom.
Did he ask for peanut butter on his hot dog?
He always asks for peanut butter on his hot dog. He's gone. It's like Groundhog Day with him. You see him every 6 months. There's Elvis going to commit suicide again with the peanut butter hot dog sandwich deep fried like his mama used to make. Ain't nothing but here we are in Christchurch, New Zealand again. Every Tuesday we do the show here.
We fly down here, Bon.
I never get any emails from anybody in Christchurch saying, hey, I caught your show. I was driving to work and I pulled over and threw up or anything. You know, I never get any emails. You think anyone listens to the show down here?
I don't send those to you. I get them, but I don't send them to you because they're just too
Are awesome. We still on the air in RDU? Or they've been too polite to tell us that they haven't been broadcasting this show for 6 months and they didn't want to, you know, they just wanted to be polite and we've actually just been not broadcasting at all. Is that what's going on? Pretty much.
Oh, that's funny. That would be funny.
Freaking hilarious. Well, we'll be back with more show that not being broadcast right after this imaginary musical break. Okay. All right, we're back, and so are you. It's apparently, but we know that's not true.
We know you're out there.
So anyway, Stacey.
What were you talking about? Oh, yeah, you were talking about suicide hot dogs then.
Yeah, yeah.
But So I want to ask about this whole Lehman Brothers thing. It's quite clear, you know, as you had warned 2 years before it emerged, or 2 years ago, a few months before that Lehman Brothers collapsed, you warned of their peekaboo accounting. But the report, the investigation into the collapse of Lehman Brothers, the they call it a gimmick.
Yeah, that's right. They call it a gimmick. That's right.
And they also use another analogy, which you have used all the time. So I'm pretty convinced this guy, Anton, who wrote the report, he's been reading your stuff. Because says that using this Repo 105 was like a drug. And you always talk about it's reverse drug dealing.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll get into that whole reverse drug dealing. Yeah, good idea. So usually in drug dealing, let's say you're a cocaine dealer and you get a kilo of pure rock from your Mexican drug dealing buddy down there in Juarez, and you want to turn it into 10 kilos of, you know, powder that you can sell to some crackheads and cokeheads and methamphetamine heads in El Paso, Texas. That's pretty much the entire population now. Well, you know, you get yourself 9 kilos of cut. You know, like, use, I think, baby laxative because the consistency of it is similar or exact to the powder cocaine. And you put that into your cocaine and you end up with, 10 kilos of 1/10 the strength product. Of course, you can sell that to these meth heads and get a lot of money to go buy a gun and shoot your enemies with. Now, in reverse drug dealing, what you do is you first of all, you start off with really junky mortgage paper. Let's say the person who's the methamphetamine, let's say Citigroup gave him $500,000 to buy a trailer park that was located on a toxic dump. And they can't afford to pay their mortgage anymore because they've got a big hypodermic needle stuffed into their gonads. And they're trying to shoot their weight and smack. So they got a default on their mortgage. And Citigroup's got to figure out a way to get rid of this piece of paper on their balance sheet that has about as much chance of being repaid, as David Cameron has becoming MP. I'm sorry, PM. Or is it BM? The next election. So what you do is you take, not baby laxative, but you take AAA-rated government paper. And you mix that in with your junk bond, your collateralized debt obligation. And the rating agency, like Moody's or S&P, will give the whole pile of junk, the whole pile of poo, they'll say it's worth AAA, just like if the whole thing were a AAA-rated government bond, you see? It's reverse drug dealing. And so this is then sliced and diced or turned into derivatives and sold to some bank who gets their money back from that mortgage that has no possibility of ever being repaid. And by the way, this is why banks make that loan to begin with. They know that the person's never going to repay it. But they also know that using reverse drug dealing and adding AAA-rated government bonds to a pool of all this worthless paper allows them to get it off their balance sheet. So when people say, oh, it's not predatory lending, these people willfully took on these mortgages and it's their fault, that's complete nonsense. Because the person selling the loan has no expectation of ever having to needing to collect that loan. They're simply selling it off into the derivatives market. So, of course, they're going to use predatory tactics to get people to take in these loans that they can't possibly afford. So, of course, it's predation by the banks against the population who are being hijacked by these banking jihadis. Of course, it's financial terrorism.
It also sounds like a classic con. You know, you always see in the movie, the con man shows up with his suitcase of allegedly $1 million.
Yeah.
And it's actually, you know, the bad guy or the person being conned opens the suitcase, sees the $100 across the top of the suitcase, and like shuts it quick before the police arrive and dashes off. But then, of course, once they get to their motel to count the money, they see it's all newspaper cut up below it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like what you're seeing with the cons that were perpetrated upon the world by these bankers, is that they just, you know, it was a bunch of worthless newspaper, which was basically these mortgages that were sold to people who couldn't pay it. And they put a few treasury bonds on top of it.
Yeah, well, this is the funny scene that was played out in European banks in 2009, because there was about a six-month period of their time there when they were saying, oh, those stupid American bankers, they got themselves into this whole subprime mortgage problem here in Europe. Our banks, we would never buy in to make loans to these white trash trailer park people.
Yeah, because they didn't in their own countries. In Europe, there is no non-recourse loan. You actually, you know, a person can't just walk away from it. And the person can't take out a loan worth 10 times their income in France, say, or Germany.
That's right. So there was this Schengenfois.
Yeah.
You know, like, how, you stupid Americans. And then 6 months later, they get a note from their margin clerk and says, oh, Mr. German margin clerk, did you know that your German bank has $100 billion worth of derivatives that Moody's gave a AAA rating to that are collateralized by trailer trash in America?
Well, I think the banks themselves knew what they were buying because they were, you know, collaborating and colluding. But it was the perhaps some politicians and certainly the commentators here and, you know, cultural commentators who were like, ha ha, white trash America. You guys are, you know, nobody has a real job there. They all work at McDonald's. And but then their own bank account got wiped out.
Yeah, they needed big bailouts and German banks, drank banks all over Europe. You know, and this was, and they were all making these repo loans, you know, between Lehman Brothers and, of course, banks in London and in Europe were doing it because there was a regulatory arbitrage, because the regulations in London are not burdened by Sarbanes-Oxley. And so they can have a legal opinion stating that this is a bona fide transaction, when in fact it was not a bona fide transaction. It was accounting fraud. That was given the green light by one of the remaining accounting groups. But as the Financial Times points out, you can't really take these accounting firms to court because there's not many of them left. And if another one goes under, there won't be anyone to do any fraudulent accounting at all. And what will happen to the economy then?
Exactly. Who will provide the repo to
who's
grow
going to provide the repo to grow the fraudulent crops if you get rid of another accounting firm?
Okay, well, that's it for this week's Truth About Markets, Christchurch, New Zealand, 98.5 FM.
Bye, y'all.